Welcome to Music History Monday for July 9th, 2018. This is Bob Greenberg, and this week's podcast is entitled A Decidedly Politically Incorrect Rant. As events in music history go, July 9th is definitely on the lighter side, although for me personally, it is an important day, and I would use this opportunity to wish the happiest of birthdays to my beautiful daughter, Rachel Amy, who was born in Berkeley, California, 32 years ago today. But back to musical business. We will indeed recognize the birth on July 9th, 1879, 139 years ago today, of the Italian composer, musicologist, and violinist Ottorino Respighi in Bologna, that great city of lunch meat and red sauce fame. Respighi's fame as a composer rests on four works: his three orchestral tone poems, Fountains of Rome, Pines of Rome, and Roman Festivals, and the eighth of his nine operas, a work entitled La Fiamma, meaning The Flame, which received its premiere on January 23, 1934, in Rome. Fancy that, an Italian composer writing opera. In fact, there's nothing more natural in the world. Opera was invented in Italy for the same reason that surfing was invented in Hawaii. Hawaii is surrounded by warm ocean water and perfect waves, and Italians are surrounded by the musical warmth and beauty of the Italian language, that seemingly perfect amalgam of vowel and consonant. Oh, opera, how we love thee! As I pointed out in last week's Music History Monday, opera was invented in Florence, Italy, around 1600 as a courtly, aristocratic entertainment. And though it quickly became a popular entertainment in Italy, it remained for many years, particularly in France and England, an aristocratic entertainment. An aristocratic entertainment. Again, last week's podcast observed how the great Jean-Jacques Rousseau disparaged French court opera in the 1740s and 1750s for the elitism he believed it represented. And according to various arbiters of PC today, the great bulk of the operatic repertoire should be rejected as being irrelevant, as it represents an antiquated, elitist Euro world at odds with the global equality and diversity of the 21st century. Oh my God. If I had a dollar for every time I've heard some version of this screed, I'd be a very wealthy person. 21 years ago, in my Great Courses teaching company survey entitled How to Listen to and Understand Opera, I ranted about this. I have updated that rant because it is even more relevant today than it was in 1997. The rant was triggered by the introductory paragraph of a proposal for a world music course that I received from a high-end violinist based in the San Francisco Bay Area. Here is that paragraph, and I quote, "The classical tradition in Western music, in Eurocentric culture, is a dying, if not dead, tradition. The musical style of the standard repertoire grew out of a relentlessly dominating minority culture known as imperialist Europe. Audiences and players are drawn to this essentially dead tradition as an escape from interactive values which can properly be found in popular and world musical cultures. We must reject the dead tissue of our elitist past and embrace the living traditions of the present if we, as musicians and audiences, are to be relevant to our times." Unquote. Okay, this is complete nonsense. Questions. When we marvel at the Parthenon in Athens, Do we remind ourselves that it is a product of a patriarchal, femophobic, faux democratic boys' club regime? When we stand awestruck before Michelangelo's Pietà at St. Peter's in Rome, do we ruminate upon the elitist, oppressive, Machiavellian, robber baron, mercantilistic ruling class that commissioned it? When we move and groove to really good, down and dirty rock and roll, do we pause to reflect upon the grimy, stinking, tattooed, psychosexual, drug-inspired environment that was its original milieu? When we stand in tears before the subtlety and power of a painting by Rembrandt, Rubens, or Vermeer, do we give a rat's rump that this art, quote, grew out of a relentlessly dominating minority culture known as imperialistic Europe, unquote? No, we don't care. So why do some of us feel the need to flog and flay our marvelous and timeless musical heritage because the circumstances surrounding some of its creation don't live up to our contemporary view of correct creational standards? I'd suggest that we've got it backwards today. There's nothing wrong with the art itself, art created, incidentally, by middle-class and working-class individuals. Rather, there's something wrong with us. If we as a culture, as a civilization, cannot understand and appreciate and assimilate as our own the crystalline truths of the best art from our past, what does that say about us here today? Is Mozart's extraordinary insight into the human condition we are witness to in his operas irrelevant to us because it was a product of imperialistic Europe? Or are we today culturally and intellectually unworthy of Mozart himself? Please, let's think about this. Let us pretend that in Josephine Vienna, circa 1780 to 1790, there was a movement to equalize the musical arts, to celebrate, say, beer hall dance music at the expense of more elevated, elitist music. Great. Today we'd have lots of crummy beer hall dance music. Divorced from its social constituency, such a repertoire would simply stand as a monument to amateurism and bad taste. The great works of Mozart, Haydn, and Beethoven might have gone unwritten for simple lack of support and interest. Not only would we, today, be denied their extraordinary musical legacy, but all the composers who have lived since the 1780s would have lacked essential models for their own music, thereby altering profoundly, I fear, for the much worse, the evolution of Western music. If Mozart and Wagner and Puccini and Respighi are dead art, I would suggest we've forgotten how to properly live. In an age of brainless media that celebrates victims, some of us actually seem to believe that we are the victims of a Eurocentric musical repertoire, iconographic of phallocentric imperialism and repression, as if there's some sort of cultural conspiracy out to get us. Oh, we can only wonder where Oliver Stone stands on this. What should be important to us is content, and whether or not that content speaks to us. Back, por favore, to opera. The great works of the operatic repertoire, these investigations through words and music of the human condition, are as relevant and classic as the Iliad, Canterbury Tales, King Lear, Tom Jones, the book, not the singer, Catcher in the Rye, and Graffiti's Rainbow, and are certainly more relevant than much, if not most, of the pap that passes for contemporary popular culture. Might I be so incorrect as to suggest that their oppressive sins, notwithstanding, when it comes to the arts, I'm grateful to the aristocratic and clerical classes of Europe. Without them, much of the greatest visual art, music, literature, and architecture would simply not have been created. These people of wealth had the time, they had the resources, and they had the vision, for whatever selfish reasons, to finance the work of great artists. I only wish our financial aristocracy today were one-tenth as interested in our contemporary arts. There would be no crisis in the arts as we know it today, and the pluralism that is central to our global culture would help to ensure that our new art would become the province of the many, not just the few. Great opera, great art, no matter when it was created, is not elitist entertainment. It is for all of us, each and every one. Thank you. I feel so much better. For more such musical ranting and raving, heckling and haranguing, opining and bloviating, I would direct your attention to any one of my great courses surveys, which can be examined and downloaded from my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com. Thank you.